There's no announcement of when the special election will be for this, which needs to come down from Governor Tony Evers. Who knows? Maybe Tony will be a little petty off of all of those appointments that the legislature is sitting on.
Previous appointees can sit on those boards years past their expiration date, like a bad carton of cottage cheese.
That Jane.
Okay.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time, this is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Hello, Wisconsin!
Hello, Wisconsin! Welcome to the lunch hour of As Goes Wisconsin. It's Wednesday, so Greg Bach is here. It's a weekday, so Jane Madnair is here. And we are very excited and going to cut right to the chase because we're so happy to have our guest for this segment, Judge Janet Protasiewicz. How are you doing today, Judge?
I am good. Thank you so very much. I'm very happy to be here with you.
We're so happy to have you. So fresh off the debate, we asked this of each other at the top of the show today. On a rating scale of salsa, how spicy do you think yesterday's debate was?
It got pretty spicy, I'll tell you. It got pretty spicy. I was prepared for it to be spicy, so I think that I thought it was a little less spicy than the rest of the world did, including my husband, who was in the audience, who was like, oh my God, was that brutal? And I said, well, I've been watching his previous debate, so I think I may have insulated myself to a certain extent. I kind of knew what was coming.
And so how, you know, it was the only one that was going to happen. We got it. I think that was everyone's takeaway was you both did the gloves are off as far as how a lot of the things we see in the articles were actually said face to face. But I kind of said as like, nothing really surprised me. Did anything surprise you?
No, nothing surprised me either. I mean, and I think that I was able to draw the distinctions that I wanted to draw during the debate. And I think that the moderators did a good job to the best of their ability of, you know, keeping things on the rails, so to speak, mm-hmm. and, you know, informing, you know, I think it was a good debate. I think that anybody who saw it should be able to determine from that debate who they care to support in this Supreme Court race.
Absolutely.
And Judge Janet, you're happy with the one debate, the decision to make the one debate happen. You're good with what happened last night then?
I'm good with what happened, but I'll tell you this. I would have enjoyed debating, you know, Dan Kelly numerous times. And I think that the message that people don't understand is I'm also working full time. And, you know, we have a tremendous backlog in Milwaukee County. You know, I'm a judge in Milwaukee County. I had to take off yesterday from work and rearrange a schedule to do that. So I'm working full time and I'm campaigning full time. And so, you know, it's really challenging. So, you know, and I'm trying to get all over the state as well, which is why, you know, we determined one debate should be sufficient. Now, that's not to say I haven't had, you know, opportunities where the two of us have been together. We were just, you know, together in Elkhart Lake at an event with, you know, county leaders. And we were both invited to an event last week with Native American leaders. I was there. He wasn't there. My understanding is he was at a fundraiser, you know, being held by one of the people who thought the January 6th insurrection at our United States Capitol was just a nice exercise in, let's just say, civil protesting, so to speak. So
they were tourists.
Right.
So I guess that is, I mean, has this, because you've obviously run campaigns before, but this is their first statewide campaign. And so how has it been? I mean, I guess in the you got 2 weeks left. And so as far as what's happened so far, has there anything been surprising to you as far as what your expectations were versus what the reality has been with such a big, important campaign?
I'd say this. I was not anticipating that the people of the state of Wisconsin would care so much about this race. And so when I was starting to look at running for this seat about a year ago, I was thinking, okay, what's the path to victory, right? It's an off-year spring election. Really typically low turnout in those races. And, you know, the more I thought about it, my true belief is that our democracy is on the line, which is why I decided to run. But everywhere I'm going across this entire state, you know, we can barely fit people into the venues. I was in Barneveld on this really cold, snowy morning at their library, which was opened up, you know, before it was open to the public for a meet and greet. And it was packed with people. You know, we were in Mays O'Maney. It was really cold. It was really blustery. We were at a coffee shop that was, you know, literally packed with people. We had a fundraiser, and no candidate ever wants to say this. We had a fundraiser a week or so before the primary, and we had to turn people away. We didn't have enough room. We didn't have enough parking. Can you imagine what that's like? None of us ever want that to happen. So, you know, the enthusiasm, the really what I would call unbridled enthusiasm that I'm seeing across the state really warms my heart, how much people care about this race. I was in Wild Rose last Saturday morning, and on the way to Wild Rose, just as an aside, I saw a bald eagle, which I took as a sign of very good luck. And I went into this venue in Wild Rose, a town of 700 people, and there must have been 100 people at the event. So it's really been remarkable how much people care about this state and how much they want to bring a sense of normal and integrity back to their Supreme Court. It's utterly remarkable.
And is that the kind of conversations you're having as far as when you're actually out there talking to people of why? Because I think we were all seeing the results from the primary. One, obviously, you had a very good night that night, but also the state of Wisconsin and democracy had a good night that night because it was a much higher turnout than we typically get for a spring primary. And so when you're at these events that are so full, what's driving the passion that you feel like is why they're at above average amount of people are so invested in this race?
Well, I was wishing that they were all excited about seeing me, but that's not the case. They're really excited about an opportunity to have integrity back on their Supreme Court, but they're also really interested in a number of issues. Everywhere I go, people are concerned about the maps. People are concerned about women's right to choose. But, you know, people are also concerned about LGBTQ rights. They're concerned about marriage equality. They are really concerned about the 2024 presidential election and what's going to happen with our 10 electoral votes in the event that Dan Kelly's on our Supreme Court. And so they care so deeply about so many issues. And it's been such a learning experience. You know, I'm from an urban area, and I didn't realize how much those forever chemicals were impeding the ability of small family farmers to hand their farm down generation to generation, and that's their progeny. And they're not going to be able to do that, you know, if in fact, their land is contaminated. You know, I was on two Native American reservations, I think a week and a half ago, and you talk to people about the land and that's what they have and the treaty rights and how concerned they are about making sure that, you know, treaty rights continue to be enforced. And people all over are concerned about so many different issues, and they are coming out in droves to talk about it.
And we're talking to Judge Janet Prerosiewicz about just the campaign in general right now. And so because it sounds like sometimes I feel like one of the reasons why there's not huge turnout in the spring is we have a lot of elections here, but also trying to connect the dots always of how this impacts your life. And I think for a lot of us who never interact with the judicial system, we're not lawyers. We never, besides maybe a speeding ticket hurt here or there, a lot of people never have to interact with the judicial system. And so what do you wish, and maybe, or has it surprised you how much people do have been able to connect the dots? But if not, what do you wish the average Wisconsinite knew about the judicial system / what a Wisconsin Supreme Court justice does?
Well, it's interesting. People seem to be very well informed about this particular race. You know, as I travel around the state, and I'm traveling all over, we have some really long days, some really long, interesting days, but some really long days. And they seem to be able to connect the dots. And I think the reason they're able to connect the dots is because people seem to understand that that 1849 abortion ban is going to be determined in our Supreme Court. People seem to understand that a fresh look at the maps is likely to come before our Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. They seem to understand that the issues that they care about, that regular people care about, are likely to come in front of this court. And I think that that is what is causing this really heightened sense of engagement in regard to this particular race. And you couple that with the fact that we have an opportunity for the first time in many, many years to actually shift the balance on this court. Yeah. You know, that, you know, is what I tell people is really not only the issues, we have this golden opportunity. You know, we're not dealing with potentially a 6-1 or 5-2 court. We're dealing actually with shifting the majority. So I think when you put all of that together, it has certainly been the recipe for very heightened interest in this seat.
And now as you're getting into the last, like, less than 2 weeks in the campaign before the election, what is the message after the debate, now that we're coming to the home stretch, what is the...
People are voting.
Yeah, people are voting now. People are getting out there and voting early. What is the message that you're trying to hammer home to all those people in Wisconsin who are watching this with such interest?
Get out and vote and make sure that you get your friends and your family out to vote. You know, we can't prevail without those votes. And I tell people everywhere I go, your vote is the great equalizer. Everybody's vote is equal. You know, the person who I was in the concourse in Madison talking to people last week, and I said, guess what? The person in the nicest room in this hotel, staying in the nicest room, their vote counts as much as the person that's cleaning this room. Mm-hmm. It's the great equalizer. So you want to have your voice heard. You get to the polls. And I'm hopeful that people are doing just that. People have told me yesterday that they know that there were lines in Madison at the library for early voting. I haven't heard anything else from around the state. I'd be curious to know what the voting situation is looking like. But I'm very hopeful that we'll have a robust turnout, but only if people make sure they get out. And I've also told people, we don't know what the weather is going to be like on April 4th. Mm-hmm. Do your best. Mm-hmm. Get out early. It's easy to early vote. Get out early and, you know, have your voice heard.
Absolutely. And we were saying that yesterday as far as there's no reason not to. If your area offers it, no reason to just get in there and get it done. I will say anecdotally, I got a lot of comments on some of my videos yesterday that people are already voting. So I think it looks good for democracy. So Judge Janet Protasiewicz, thank you so much for taking time with us today. And good luck with the last 2 weeks.
Thank you. I was delighted to be here. Have a nice day, everybody.
You too. All right. This is As Goes Wisconsin. We'll be back in a minute.
Down by my polling station, oh mother, tell your children not to do what I have done. I sat out on election day and someone else just won.
You are listening to As Goes Wisconsin, a product of Civic Media. Enjoy it live across Wisconsin, Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. until 2 p.m. Find your local station on our website, civicmedia.us, or on the Civic Media app, and catch any of your favorite shows as a podcast wherever you listen.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin.
Get down!
Action movie rendition.
Tell my wife I loved her. Tell her yourself.
What's that from?
Any movie that sucks.
Mad Max Fury Road.
That movie was great. That movie was great.
So, speaking of Mad Max Fury Road.
Little dystopian.
And I don't want to center... This is a setup. I'm going to talk about this UN, this new climate report that came out this week, but it's a setup for a bigger conversation around doomerism, which I actually is a newer term. I feel like only in the last couple of weeks I even found out that this was a thing. Doomer.
Oh, I was just saying, yeah. Oh, darn it.
But you know, when you hear news like this, it puts into context people's ability, you know, decision and ability, like not decision, but their feeling of doom and gloom.
Yeah.
So, all right. The world, I think we all know this, the world needs to start acting now to rein in climate change. A new UN-backed report stressed, quote, "The climate time bomb is ticking," said United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres. Humanity is on thin ice, and that ice is melting fast. The report that was released this week warns Earth is on track to reach a critical global warming threshold within the next decade. Hundreds of scientists from around the world worked together to create the report. One finding the panel has very high confidence in: there is a rapidly closing window of opportunity to secure a livable and sustainable future for all. So you're telling me there's a chance.
Good reference.
And so, I mean, this is I can't even wrap my head around what this actually means because I'm not a scientist. But greenhouse gases need to be reduced by 50% by 2030, which feels like a lot.
That's not much time.
I was going to say that's like 6.5 years away. So
to keep in this, we need to do that to keep climate change within 1.5 degrees Celsius of pre-industrial levels.
Oh, Celsius? That's fine, then. We're good.
I know, we're totally...
We're good. I don't live in the UK. Yeah. Fine.
That's the thing with Celsius that's wild, because, like, someone made this joke once of, like, when you have a fever, you know, and it's Fahrenheit, so we, you know, your temperature is usually, like,
98.7.
And if you go up to 100, so if you're up, like, 2 degrees, you're sick, but you're alive. If you go 2 degrees in Celsius, like, you're dead.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, the increments are really intense in Celsius. And so 1.5 degrees in Celsius
is 34 degrees Fahrenheit.
Is it really?
Yeah, no. 1.5 to Fahrenheit. I'm looking at it right now.
Oh, my.
Yeah, 1.5 degrees Celsius equals 34.7 Fahrenheit.
Okay. So that's a big jump. And so I bring this up because I would normally not want to talk about this because it's like, so what do we do as individuals, as poor, not poor, well, relatively poor, because we're not the ones in the private jets.
No.
We're not the ones making decisions. We're not the CEOs of companies that are spilling things or drilling things. We try to recycle, but then you watch The Life of Plastic and find out that recycling is a total sham.
I only go to coffee places that support local.
Yes, as he drinks his Starbucks. That, you know, they got rid of, they made lids now, so you don't have a plastic straw, but the lid is made out of plastic.
And they still ask you every time, do you want a straw? Because enough people are like, I want a straw.
I know. And so whenever I read climate change stuff, it's very depressing because it only, you know, there's clearly, I could get an electric car, which I'm pretty sure my next one will be when my lease is up on this. Again, you can try to recycle. You can get a water bottle instead of having bottled water. Like, there's stuff that we individually can do, but, like, each of us as individuals are not contributing in the same way private jets, massive farms, car-first cities instead of pedestrian-first cities.
You, like, are bumming me out, dude.
So this is the whole point. So I bring this up not because – I bring it up because thinking about it too much – for anyone, I think, unless you just are denying it's a real thing.
Oh, those people are there.
And those people exist. But it gets you to the point of, like, well, what can I do? We're all screwed. Right?
Yeah.
Thus, doomerism.
Yep.
Had you heard of this term before, Jay?
No, I've never heard of it.
You've never heard of it? So neither of this is all kind of, again, in the last 2 weeks, I think I heard it on a podcast, and then I saw articles popping up around it on Vox and New York Times and la, la, la. And...
liberal.
And, yeah, thanks. big reveal.
What?
And I am struggling with this. Like, I don't think of myself as a doomer.
No, not at all. You are not a doomer whatsoever.
Do you think of yourself as a doomer?
No, I do not.
Jane, do you think of yourself as a doomer?
I'm just cynical.
You are cynical, but you're not depressed over the things outside of your control.
Depressed? No. Certainly very, very concerned.
So I think we're going to talk about this for the rest of this noon hour as far as doomerism. What is it? Is it helpful? And also, is it even accurate? Because in many ways, on depending on what you're looking at, we've never been better. In the history of time
depending
of the world.
On what you're measuring.
Depending on what you're measuring.
Don't forget to call in.
So this is the topic du jour, 844-967-2789. Doomerism. Is it helpful? I don't know. We're going to keep talking about it. I'll find a better question. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinair. He is Greg Bach. And we're talking about doomerism. And is there a way to escape feeling doom and gloom and also be an informed citizen? And I guess the answer is yes. I read a lot of news. I don't consider myself a doomer.
No.
And it's hard to, when you talk about things that are outside of your control, to not get sucked into everything is awful.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
And so this whole, I would love to hear from you, especially if you're someone who does consider yourself a doomer, although that feels like a weird thing to admit. But as far as someone who finds themselves more on the negative of our government is corrupt, capitalism is ruining everything, climate change is going to kill all of us, it's not ethical to have children, finding yourself on the brink, we're on the brink of humanity, and it only goes I once read a tweet that was like happy that I was born, like in the terms of like F around and find out,
yeah,
that I was born at the end of the F around century, only have to live through the find out century. And so if you feel like you read a lot of news and you get sucked into this, how do you get yourself out of it? 844-967-2789. So this whole concept came up to me, it came to my attention because I was listening to a podcast that played a video from the series is called Not My Party by Tim Miller. It's part of the Bulwark. He does a similar thing to what I do, except with a lot more editing prowess as far as super fast pace, lots of cuts. It's on Snapchat and YouTube. So we've chopped it up a little bit, but I had not heard of this term before I saw this video. So we'll play the first clip and then talk about it.
It is too late to reverse climate change.
Having my regular meltdown and realizing I'm never going to escape capitalism.
Income inequality is worse now than it was during the French Revolution, and I don't know how to make a guillotine.
Okay, Doomer. Here's another idea. Make babies and be happy.
Oh, behave.
So that was a series of clips taken from the internet of people being very Doomer-like.
Yeah.
And then Tim Miller coming in and putting sunglasses on says his thesis is make babies and be happy. And so Wikipedia defines doomers and by extension doomerism as people who are extremely pessimistic or fatalistic about global problems such as overpopulation, oil, climate change, pollution, and some doomers assert there is a possibility these problems will bring about human extinction. And he points out in the video a pretty viral tweet that's now private. So she's a Washington Post lifestyle tech editor. Her name's Taylor Lorenz. And I went to go try to find the original tweet today, and her entire account's now private.
Oh, wow.
And so you can't see. So I think this is probably part of it, but she said controversial things about masks and stuff. Not controversial. She's very much on the side that if you wear, like, on COVID, like, everyone should still be wearing masks and yada, yada. But this was her tweet that kind of, I think, spawned a lot of this conversation. Because simultaneous to this is so many conversations around mental health, especially mental health of teenagers. Because there's been, in this last month, reports that teenagers, especially teenage girls, are not okay.
Yeah.
And a lot of that conversation spun off into, it's the phones. It's the phones, it's social media, blah, blah, blah. And Taylor Lorenz wrote, people are like, why are kids so depressed? It must be their phones. But never mention the fact that we're living in late-stage capitalist hellscape during an ongoing deadly pandemic with record wealth inequality, a social safety net, job security as climate change cooks the world. Not to be a doomer, but you have to be delusional to look at life in our country right now and have any amount of hope or optimism.
That's pretty
and
weak.
She's my age. That's like
zero.
Zero
social. Okay.
Oh, wow. That's what it is. Yeah. Zero social security net.
Yeah.
Job security as climate change. And I feel like some of those things I've said before.
Mm-hmm.
Late stage capitalism, you know, everything's a monopoly, everything's profit seeking, climate change is awful, wealth inequality is awful. Like, I've said all these things.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because I think sometimes, is it because of the echo chamber we live in of talking about how bad everything is compared to actual data on the ever-arching timeline of human existence, comparing it to how good we're actually relatively doing right now compared to where we've been in the past?
Well, when I read this, anytime, I don't know, I'm not a doomer at all, and so reading this just seems like a momentary, just, I'm gonna put a tweet out there, I'm frustrated, which I get, totally get frustration, but also, if you're gonna say such things here, can you point me to your data? Hey, zero social security safety net. Here are the numbers. Climate change cooks the world. We understand climate change is a problem, but when you use inflammatory language like that, when you use like really hyperbolic language like that, you then take on, especially when you have that blue check mark and you have a platform like she does, you take on a responsibility.
I mean, anyone can have a blue check mark. Now you just got to pay like $8 a month.
Well, I really don't. I honestly
can't trust it anymore.
I don't think it actually makes any more of a difference. It makes less of a difference now, because when you pay that blue, regardless, you have that blue check. Thank you. Derail me. You take on a responsibility of influencing people, as she's probably an influencer or style person, whatever she does at that paper. But I don't want to say there shouldn't be consequences, but like when you say something like that, that's so inflammatory, come with some data too, because if not, you're just feeding the problem, and that's not good. That is awful, and I just think that's irresponsible. I mean, it's your Twitter account, but you have a platform. Use it wisely.
Well, and it's interesting that you went to the irresponsible, because the next part of Tim Miller's video is saying, like, in the conversations, part of the problem is the conversations that we keep saying, some people keep saying, everything is so terrible. So it actually is influencing more and more people to believe everything is terrible.
Color me delusional then. From our miracle vaccines, to our decently sturdy social safety net, to our record low unemployment, almost all our critiques about society are wrong.
You are wrong.
And if you think 2023 America is a hellscape, may I suggest you go out, get some ice cream, touch grass, maybe see a show.
You need to chill a little.
The thing that really pisses me off about arguments like this is that people are actually being persuaded by it. Stress from doomerism is a key reason why young people are increasingly unhappy. And it's convincing experiencing a surprisingly large portion that they might not want to have kids at all.
It's really concerning thinking about our futures and thinking about like the time that we do have left on this earth. I'm not sure if I personally would want to fit kids into that.
Somebody please think of the children.
A recent poll of 16 to 25 year olds showed that 39% of them are uncertain about whether they'd have kids. New York Times columnist Ezra Klein says the question he most gets from readers is, should I have kids given the climate crisis? And Toray tweeted that his son thinks it's immoral to have kids because the world is so horrible.
You make me sad.
That's, I mean, and so it's interesting because I feel like on the both sides, so she's saying, don't blame the, she being Taylor Lorenz. We're talking about doomerism and its usefulness or harm, really.
Yeah.
And so on the one side, Taylor Lorenz, like, it's, I think she was basically saying, it's offensive that you're diminishing young people's depression to its social media and phones and not acknowledging how bleak the world looks. And on Tim Miller's video, he's saying, everyone continuing to talk about how bleak the world looks is why people are depressed. So I don't feel like both can be true, and like, or maybe both can be true.
Yeah, I mean, if kids are, and I take mental health very seriously, and I don't want to see anybody suffering from it, especially young people, but if they're bleak about the future, where are they getting the information? They are getting it from their phones. There is something to be said about it. It's not the total sum blame of it all, but also this Tim Miller video, while very entertaining and fun, and I do like the idea that he is presenting a counter argument to the idea, I also am just like, dude, lay off on the kids stuff. I don't know why, but it just felt like he's just saying, have kids, it'll be much better.
Well, and he's not the only one making that argument. Ezra Klein made this argument the summer.
And I read one of the articles from him about, like, I don't think the climate crisis shouldn't influence you having kids. But as someone who doesn't have kids, who doesn't want to have kids, like, no, I don't want to have kids, period. It has nothing to do with the climate crisis. Mm-hmm. It has everything to do with me not wanting to have kids. But him just keep on pushing it and pushing him, like, I feel like he was undercutting the counter argument to doomerism and saying, yeah, you know, make a baby. What? Okay. Maybe I'm missing the point.
See, and I don't necessarily think people thinking twice about having a child is a bad thing. I think there are far too many people, just because you can doesn't mean you should. Mm-hmm. So just because you can procreate doesn't mean you're going to be a great parent. So I think that's not that we're never having children in the, you know, the end of the species, but I think people need to think long and hard about what this really means, because I think a lot of people just think this is part of life and it's all going to be fine. And I'm not so sure about that.
But I think there's two different things when we bring in the kids part of this. And I think this is an interesting question. So if you have thoughts on, like, is it ethical to have children? Like, if you want children, but you're choosing not to have them because of the impact on the climate, that's what I mean when I say, is it ethical to have, you don't want to bring children into this world.
Yeah.
But otherwise, if you weren't so doom and gloom, you would want children. So do you, I guess this is a question to the audience.
Do we want someone who's doom and gloom having kids?
Do you feel like it's ethical to have children in this day and age? 844-967-2789. Because I think the argument that Tim Miller makes, Ezra Klein makes, there's an article by Noah Beck that he, so there comes back to, I think, two things in that proposition. One, the idea that proof, basically, poverty is diminished. And there's actually a great book called Factfulness that does look at all these in the scope of health out globally.
Health outcomes. Over history. Yeah.
Over history, poverty, science. There's so many things that we are making advancements to. And that, like, for a long time, basically surviving to not be malnourished wasn't hard times. It was just life for a majority of people. And that people were still having kids despite the fact that the, you know, 30% of them didn't live to be 18.
Yeah.
And so the idea that it's always been a bad time in the world and, like, reasons to not have kids, and yet we do it anyways. And so I think that's different than people who would otherwise be good parents, who are thoughtful, who are you know, economically available to have kids who are choosing not to is different than what you just said, Jane, as far as not everyone should have kids because they wouldn't be good parents. I think we're trying to talk about the people who otherwise would.
Would, yeah. Right.
I don't think, I mean, I guess I would ask the question is, if you are so concerned about the world, which I think we should be concerned about the world, not having children, is that an admirable sacrifice? You know, if you say, look, I'm not having kids because of the climate crisis, I'm not having kids because of population or consumerism or all these things, like, should I be like, oh, that's noble of you? No, I mean, I feel like at the end of the day, if you do, you actually want to have kids? If you don't, then you don't.
Just own it.
Just own that. And if you do want to have kids and you're using climate crisis as a reason, you're going to grow up to be a resentful, angry human being when you realize one day, I should have had a kid.
Yeah. So we're going to keep talking about this. But I think the bigger question also is, like, comes back to how do you stay informed but don't slip into everything is awful?
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a secret of how you do that, 844-967-2789. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. He is Greg Mattenair. He is Greg Bach. She is Jane Mattenair. And we're talking about doomerism. And Greg just said something at the break as far as, like, it's almost such a new concept that, I mean, none of us had even heard of it.
Yeah.
Recently. It's obviously a playoff of Boomer a little bit. But I think the term is new, but the concept of
worrying about the future?
The attitude.
Having so much information, you know, I would say being woke. In the original...
Here we go, everybody.
In the original term of what it was meant to be used for, as far as being aware of, like, the systems at play. What, you don't think that was...
No, I mean, well, yeah, yes.
The original.
But, like, I feel like being woke is, like, understanding that the systems are in play and what the systems are. But, like, doomer to me sounds like.
No, I know. But I was because I wanted to use that word as far as, but I was like, it's now been so corrupted that I can't. Yeah. But as far as, like, understanding the banking system, understanding how monopolies work, understanding how, like, corruption and, like, having that much information but feeling powerless over what you can do about it, like. How do you balance? I think that is not a new concept.
No.
And finding the balance between not just choosing to, like, live in an island, be ignorant, and be like, well, it's not my problem, to, like, balance being informed without being overwhelmed with how much bad stuff is in the world.
They've branded it.
Yes.
844-967-2789 if you want to join us anytime here on As Goes Wisconsin. Tom from Cedarburg joining us. Tom, what do you want to say about doomerism?
Well, I'm not really sure that's a real thing. I think it's more likely that really not that many years ago, from the 60s and back, there wasn't the pill available the way there is now, or really abortion either, and that people would get married and, you know, have relations and have children, and there really wasn't much choice, you know, if people loved each other, where now people have a choice and they're exercising that choice, whether it be the pill or abortion or whatever. And and years ago too, women had to get married to make it, because there was very few women who make really any decent money, because they weren't allowed in colleges and stuff like that, so they're more motivated to have kids, and where now women can make it on their own, without being married.
So, I hear that argument. I understand. But as far as, do you feel like you are a doomer at all, or do you feel like you, like, find yourself having some doomerism as far as the state of the world?
Well, there's always reasons not to, and that's gone back through, you know, through history. Personally, I would like to get married and have a family, but that's really been taken away from me. But it's a good thing to have children, I think, you know, all in all. It's a good thing for society, and I think it keeps people happier to have children, especially if they don't have children and they get older. They regret it, like you've said. I wanted to say, too, that I like to listen to your show, and I think you have a really, really good voice.
Thank you.
You know, for radio and stuff like that, and that it's a good thing you're on the air. And I hope they keep you on.
Well, thanks, Tom. Thanks for the call. And the point that he made has been made in articles. It's not a great comparison as far as, well, we've always had kids, because it's, well, we're also wired through evolution to procreate.
Yeah.
And it was only in the last 70, 60 years that we have the ability, technology to keep us from getting pregnant.
I do disagree that, you know, the idea of like, oh, you'll regret not having them one day. I mean,
I think it's very individual.
Yeah. I mean, is both of you didn't want to have kids, and that for a totally different reason than the I don't want to contribute to climate change reason.
I mean, I thought you just had kids. That's what you did. And then one day I was dating a woman who didn't want kids. I'm like, that's an option?
Oh, really?
And I really thought about it. And I thought about why I would or wouldn't want it. And I realized, no, I don't want children. And I still to this day feel I would love to be a grandpa.
You'd make a great grandpa.
I mean, amazing grandpa.
But you're like a good uncle.
I'm a great uncle. Yeah. I am a fun uncle. But yeah, I just that idea is like, well, aren't you going to regret? Who's going to take care of you? I don't know. The state? You and Mike?
Well, yeah. And we do have a Polish flat, so we have the apartment in the basement now.
Yeah, but trust me, there's plenty of Americans who have family who are living alone in assisted living facilities, and their kids are not taking care of them.
Yes. Yeah.
And I think that one of the things about the doomerism thing, too, that, like, for me, well, I don't subscribe to the idea of abject doom. I also don't want to come at it with absolute sunshine, because there's a middle ground in there, because we can talk about how things are getting better, but they're not great for everyone. Because when we talk about wealth increase and wage increases and social security, yeah, but there are people out there in this country, in this world, who don't benefit from those things for various reasons. So we have to talk about those things too. It can't just be, well, it's doom and gloom. No, it's actually pretty sunshiny. No, it's somewhere in the middle where we have to look at all the topics and say, how is this actually happening and how is it affecting people?
Well, and actually, if we have time, can we play the last clip from that video? Because I think he talks about what the ideal of progressivism is. It's not by being a progressive, it is to acknowledge all the things that are bad and not do anything about it. By being a progressive is to acknowledge it and know that we can always get better.
Correct.
If all the smarties decide to sit around and sniff their own farts rather than procreate, that's not a great Darwinian path.
What do you think's the biggest threat to mankind right now?
I'd say the biggest threat right now is population collapse. Super low birth rate.
This is one place where I actually agree with Elon.
I'll allow it.
What is this world coming to?
Progressivism is supposed to be about making life better for the most amount of people. That requires being honest about problems and trying to fix them, not succumbing to a bunch of neurotic fatalists who want to make us so riddled with anxiety that we don't go out and do anything.
Not when you put
So rather than gloom and doom, go forth and try to make shit better. Enjoy all the bounty and beauty in the world. And when you find the right he, she, or they, go ahead and make a baby with them. The world could use some more new smarties to help carry the torch.
Nothing to do now but repopulate the human race.
Greg hates that point. But I wanted to play that part because of the progressivism.
Yeah.
Because I think that's what keeps me from feeling doom, is I, at least in my part of being on the show, coming here and talking about things, making videos to try to educate people, I do feel like I am doing something.
Yes.
And not just, well, what's the point?
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. That's why I said at the beginning, you are not a doomer in any way, shape, or form. Even in a moment where you could sound like one, I would know, oh, it's just a moment.
It's just a moment. She's going to get a period soon.
You've got a great voice for radio. I have a great face for radio. I'm just going to put that out there. Thank you, Jane.
All right, we got to wrap up for this hour. When we come back, the No Sour Ha Ha Fun Time Power Hour.
You did it.
I did it.
You did it.
This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Thank you for listening to As Goes Wisconsin, available on Spotify, Apple, Google, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Please subscribe and leave us a rating. As Goes Wisconsin is a product of Civic Media and airs live across Wisconsin Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Civic Media is a statewide network of radio stations broadcasting local news, local sports, thoughtful commentary, and hand-picked music. We are always streaming on the Civic Media app. Find out where you can listen on the air or learn more about Civic Media and sponsorship opportunities by going to our website, civicmedia.us. We thank you for listening.